This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The parsha of the misoinanim, of the complainers, and this week's seder is a very fascinating one and a difficult one. Firstly, let's just get the sequence of events correct. First, we have the statement that Vayisu Mehar Hashem Derech Shlishis Yomim. Bnei Yisrael traveled away from the mountain of Hashem, a journey of 3 days. That's point number one. Then comes the Vayehi Bintsoya Ha'orin Vayemi Moshe, enclosed in the two upside down nuns about which Mr. Goldberg spoke this morning. Then, immediately after that, is Vayehi Ho'om Kimisoinunim, Rab Ozne Hashem. And the people were like complainers about bad in the ears of Hashem. Doesn't tell us what they complained about. Rashi says that Kimisoinunim, they were looking for an excuse to deviate from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And what were they complaining about? Rashi tells us that they used to stay with saying, they found the road very hard. The 3 days traveling, they suffered, they found it difficult. That's what they complained about. Hashem gets furious, and there's some kind of fire which destroys some of them. And Moshe has to daven to pray to Hashem that the fire stops, and it stops. Then it says, V'ha'asaf suf asher b'kirboi. And the mixture of people who were among them, his avu taivo, they had a taivo, they had a craving. V'yoshuvu v'yivku, and they returned and cried, Gam b'nei Yisrael, also b'nei Yisrael, v'yimru mi'achileinu boso, who will give us meat? They wanted meat. Then it goes on to a whole nostalgia about the conditions in Mitzrayim, believe it or not, where they had fish and all sorts of things to eat, and here all they've got is this mon, which they're tired of. Moshe gets upset and says, what on earth can I do for them? There's nothing I can do. Hashem says, Es for li shivim ish mizikne Yisrael, gather for me a group of 70 people of the elders of Israel, of the wise people of Israel. Ashiyodato kihim zikne haram v'shoytrol, you know of the Kenim. Take them to Oil Moyed, and then comes the whole story of the Slav, the Ribbono Shel Olam provides meat for them. That's the parsha. In Moshe's reply to the people, he says, you'll eat so much meat, it'll, so to say, come out of your ears. Yan ki ma'astem es Hashem asher bekir bechem, because you despised Hashem who was in your midst. Vativku lefon of lemur, and you cried before him, saying, Lomo ze yotzol mi Mitzrayim, why have we come out of Mitzrayim? Says Rashi, Im loy shenotati shchinosi b'neichem, if it were not for the fact that I planted my presence among you, that my Shekhinah dwelt among you, if it weren't for that, you would never have been arrogant enough to get involved in all this nonsense. Which is an amazing Rashi. That means that Rashi traces the origin of this complaint, of this craving, of this negativism. Rashi traces the origin of it to Sinai, to the fact that at Mount Sinai the Ribbono Shel Olam was so close to them, and were it not for that, it wouldn't have happened. Which needs a little bit of analysis. We see a similar line in Rashi in the Gemara in Shabbos, deals with this piece of Chumash. The Gemara says, why was this little sentence of Ayyi bin Sahar placed in this particular place, answers the Gemara, Kedei lehafsik bein Puronus Rishonu lePuronus Shniya. So to make a hefsik, to make a division between the first Puronus, the first tragedy, and the second tragedy. Ask the Gemara, Puronus Shniya Mahi, what was the second tragedy? Which is a strange question from the Gemara. The first question should have been, what was the first tragedy? Firstly, sequentially, that's the correct way to ask the question. And secondly, the second tragedy is obvious. It tells us very clearly what the second tragedy was. In after Vayehi bin Sa'aruin, we read straight away, it says, there, immediately after the Vayehi bin Sa'aruin, it starts straight away that the people were misoinen him. They complained and this fire came. So it's strange that the Gemara should ask, what was the second tragedy? That's clear. The question is, what was the first tragedy? There's no mention of tragedy before that. Answers the Gemara, Puronus Shniyo Maihi, what is the second tragedy? Vayehi am kimisoinanim. When the people started complaining, that was the second tragedy, right? Puronus Rishoino, what was the first tragedy? Vayisu Mehar Hashem. That they traveled away from the mountain of Hashem. What's wrong with traveling away? They couldn't stay there all the time. Hashem told them it was time to go. For Omer Rabbi Chamo, Rabbi Chanino, Shesoru Me'acharei Hashem. They didn't just travel from the mountain of Hashem, they traveled away from Hashem. There was a distancing between themselves and Hashem. That's what happened there. The Medrash says the reason is they went too eagerly. There's a way to go, there's a way to depart. And sometimes there's too much enthusiasm in the departure. The Rishon says it's time to leave Har Sinai. The attitude should have been, okay, good, and slowly they should have got themselves ready and packed up and gone with a bit of a heavy heart. But they went quite enthusiastically. That's how the Medrash learns. But Rashi learns differently. Me'acharei Hashem, what does it mean they deviated from Hashem? B'toich gimel yomim lemasom, within 3 days of leaving, is Avu ha'asafsuf taiva. The asafsuf craved a craving, the Yisroyim al aboso, to complain for the meat, k'dei limroid ba'akodesh Baruch Hu, so as to rebel against the Ribbono Shel Olam, Rashi says. So here again we see that the way Rashi learns this Gemara, the tracing of the origins of the misoinanim, their complaining, back to the phrase Vayisu Mehar Hashem, that as they left Har Sinai, that's where the origins of this complaint took place. Although it took 3 days later for it to be expressed, that's where it all started. So we see this, and we see the Rashi on the Chumash, where Rashi says that Moshe tells them, if it weren't for the fact that you experienced Har Sinai, you would never have been complaining. You had it too good, you had the Shekhinah right amongst you, and that's why you've become so negative. We need to understand that. Now to understand the sequence of events, we need to learn a Medrash, but the Medrash is very hard. Let's see what we can do with it. After Moshe tells the Ribbono Shel Olam that I can't take this anymore, I can't handle it, the Medrash says, on the Pasuk, the Torah says, Isfoli Shivim Anoshim, gather together for me 70 people. As for the Shivim Ish, get for me 70 Anoshim. Rabbi Kay, weren't you coming? Yes, no. At the COVID that you're here, I might as well enjoy it and have you close by. Thank you. Ask the Medrash, he's got to go and gather 70 people. Wasn't there a Sanhedrin already? Why did he have to go looking for them? Faktiv b'Har Sinai, already at Har Sinai, before this, didn't it already say, Vayal Moshe v'Aaron Nodav v'Aviyu v'Shivim Zakenim? That Moshe and Aaron, Nodav and Aviyu, and 70 elders went up, so we see the 70 elders were already gathered together, they formed a unity, there was a group of the Shivim Zakenim. So the Ribbono Shel Olam should just say, bring me the 70 Zakenim. Why does he say, Esfoli, go and gather them, find them, sort them out, search for them. Put together a group of Shivim Zakenim, asked the Medrash. Why did they have to do that? Ela b'shor shebo Yisrael oison hadvorim. But when Yisrael came to this stage, Vayehi ha'am kemisoinanim, the stage of misoinanim, remember, misoinanim was the first stage when they were complaining about the difficulty of the road. Now, the Torah doesn't tell us what they complained about, but the Torah says they were complaining, Rashi says they were complaining about the traveling. And the result of that complaint, you remember, was a fire. Nisrafu kulam bo'yusashor, the Shivim Zakenim were all burnt up at that time. They died. It's becoming peculiarer and peculiarer. The other Shivim Zakenim got involved in that, and they died. Why? But they died not the same as the others, they died like Nodav and Aviyu. Remember the two sons of Aaron that were also burned. Why? She'af heim hekelu roshom ba'aloysom lahar Sinai k'shiroz hashchino. They also, just like Nodav and Aviyu, were a little light-headed when they went up part of the way up Har Sinai, and they saw the Shechina, they saw the Ribbono Shel Olam, they were a little light-headed. To understand what that means on their level, as it says, "Vayechazu es ha'elokim," they saw Hashem, "Vayechlu vayishtu," and they ate and drank. Doesn't mean they sat there and ate and drank while the Ribbono Shel Olam walked past. Can that be taken literally? Was the eating and drinking there? Who was eating? Nobody was eating. There was nothing to eat. There was nothing to drink. It's like a servant who's busy serving his master, and he's got a piece of bread in his hand. And while he's busy serving his master, he takes a bite of his own sandwiches. So they were light-headed, as if they were eating and drinking. What does that mean? They should have been burnt immediately at that time. As Kenim v'Nodav v'Aviyu, the elders and Nodav and Aviyu, they should all have died there and then. And since the day of the giving of the Torah was precious to the Ribbono Shel Olam, so Hashem didn't want to kill them on that day. It was a Yom Tov. He left it. Aval achazman gova mehen. But later on, he claimed it from them, and he had to kill them. Nodav v'Aviyu afein disrufu kushenichnasul oil moed. Nodav and Aviyu, they too were killed. They too were burnt when they went into oil moed. The hein and the zakenim disrufu kushenisavu oiso taivo. They were killed when they wanted the taivo. When they wanted, they had this craving for meat. So it's really getting strange. So the Zakenim were really punished for the fact that they were a little bit casual on Har Sinai. That's what they're really being punished for. But when are they being punished later on? When they crave for meat. Was craving for meat wrong? Are they only being punished for what took place before? What is the relationship between what took place before on Mount Sinai and this craving for meat? And Nodav and Aviyu, what have they got to do with the whole story? And then it still goes on and gets even more peculiar. Ma'u Shinema, because it says, V'asafsuf asher bekir bo yisavu taivo. The asafsuf crave the craving. Ma'u v'asafsuf, what does it mean? What is asafsuf? We've never had such a word before. Rabbi Shimon bar Abba, Rabbi Shimon bar Menasseh. There were two Rabbi Shimons who had different views. Echod mehem oimer eilu agerim sholu mehem mitzrayim v'ne'esotim mehem. These are the converts who converted only in order because they were scared and they held Bnei Yisrael in awe, so they wanted to convert. They became the Erev Rav, and they caused a lot of trouble all the way through. That's who they were. The Echod mehem oimer, and the other Rabbi Shimon says, v'asafsuf. Who is the asafsuf? Eilu Sanhedrin. That's the Sanhedrin. That's not just the Erev Rav. Now the whole thing takes on a different meaning. This is not just some rabble on the sidelines who started complaining about meat. This was the Zakenim. This was the elders of Yisrael who started talking this way. They wanted meat. Doesn't make sense. Maktiv Shem, what does it say? Vativa boim esh vatoichal b'kseh hamachaneh b'kutzim shebechaneh. It says there, and the fire came and consumed them. That's why Moshe had to go seeking new Zakenim. All the Zakenim were gone. The order is strange also because when did the fire come? The fire came after the Misoinanim. And what does the Medrash say? The Misoinanim were the ones, don't forget, who complained about the road. And what does the Medrash say? That the Sanhedrin was killed by that fire. Why? Because of what they did on Mount Sinai. But God didn't kill them on Mount Sinai only when they craved for meat. But the craving for meat takes place afterwards. It hasn't happened yet. After the fire burns, and he called the name of the place Be'ero because the fire of Hashem burnt there. And then it tells us, v'asafsuf asher bekibo ene asafsuf, which the Medrash says with the Sanhedrin, Hisavu taivo, they wanted a taivo, they were craving the meat. The Medrash says they burnt already. And yet that's why they were burned, for craving the meat. What's happening? We have a third indication that the origin of all this was much earlier. That all this started already at Har Sinai. Once again we see the pattern. This all started at Har Sinai. It wasn't later on. Those are the difficulties here. Let's try and analyze them. So on the Medrash we asked, firstly, the confusion of sequences. The Asafsuf is referred to at the end, after the fire has destroyed the people. The Medrash says that Asafsuf was the Sanhedrin, was the Shivim Zakenim. And the Medrash says they were killed at that time by this fire, which took place earlier, because they craved the meat, which took place later, really because of something they did on Mount Sinai days before, in that there was Kalus Roish, which we have to understand in itself. So we need to understand the confusion of sequences. We need to understand the events on Har Sinai. What did they? What was wrong? What does it mean they were light-headed on Mount Sinai? It doesn't make sense at all. And thirdly, what does it mean that these great people crave for meat? What should they be craving for meat for? On Mount Sinai, the Medrash tells us, "Vayechezu es ha'elikim vayochlu vayishtu." The Chumash says that they saw Hashem and they ate and they drank. "V'chi achilu shtiyo hoyso shom?" Asked the Medrash, "Was they eating and drinking there?" No, can't be. But what it means is, "Hekelu roishom ke'ochlim v'shoisim." They were casual, as if they were eating and drinking. Let's start with Nodav and Avihu. Nodav and Avihu are included in that crime. Casual as if they were eating or drinking. And their later demise, when they were brought the fire in close to Hashem at the wrong time, the wrong fire, the wrong place, they died was really, the Medrash says, because of what they did earlier. So there's a link between the two. What's the link? Casualness can be a mila, it can be a great thing, and it can be a wrong thing. Why were they casual when they saw Hashem? Either because, on their level, difficult to understand, but we'll try later on, they didn't value the experience, they didn't realize what was happening. Or, they're just so used to it that it was nothing special. One of the two. Kovid Rosh, the opposite of Kalus Rosh. Kovid Rosh, a seriousness, a deliberateness. Kovid Rosh means a consciousness of the uniqueness of the occasion, of the specialness of what's happening. That's Kovid Rosh. See, a person comes out of from the street into a shul, and he uses bad language there, and he takes out his cigarette and starts smoking, and then he's eating his sandwiches there, he takes off his jacket, opens his shirt, and makes himself at home in the shul. It says, that's Kovid Rosh. It's a shul, it's a Beis HaMedrash, that's not how you behave. The Baruch Hu is present, that's not how you behave. And then you see another person who never leaves the shul. He's in the shul, he comes in for early in the morning for Shachris, and he stays the whole day, he's learning and learning. And he's also sitting without his jacket and his shirt open, smoking a cigarette, eating his sandwiches. you don't get quite as upset about it. He's at home, Taka. This is where he lives. This is where he is. Casualness simply means that the occasion is not special. The occasion might not be special because you're used to it. You always live like that. The occasion might not be special because you don't understand what's going on. Imagine a servant in the Queen's household. And she's used to seeing the royal family in their pajamas and in their casual clothes and running around and relaxing. That's how he sees them all the time. One day he gets a note from the Queen that his presence is requested at a dinner. She served her for many years and she would like him to come to a dinner. And he turns up in a t-shirt and shorts. He says, hey, look, I'm at home here. This is how I'm always there. I see you always like this. He doesn't understand it's anything special. He's always in the palace. And everybody else who comes to the dinner, they're dressed in dinner clothes, and they went to the hairdresser the day before, and to the mikveh, and all sorts of things they did to prepare for this special occasion. So is it a special occasion or isn't it a special occasion? It depends. And it's difficult to tell sometimes what the reason is for it not being a special occasion. Chazal say one of the things that Nodav Aviyu did wrong was they were moira halocha bifnei rabom. They paskin the halocha, they decided an issue of law in the presence of Moshe. And that was proof, therefore, that their casualness was a lack of Yerushalayim. Again, we're talking on very high levels to understand what it means, Nodav Aviyu, a lack of Yerushalayim. But on their level, it means that their Yerushalayim was not what the Ribbono Shel Olam expected of people such as them, having been exposed to what they were exposed. Their level of Yerushalayim should have been still higher. And the fact that they were able to paskin aloch in front of Moshe shows that the reason for their casualness wasn't because they're comfortable with the Ribbono Shel Olam. The reason was because they was a lack of Yiro. Not quite the right degree of fear that there needs to be. And therefore they're killed. And that's the link between those two events. That the bringing of the fire against Moshe's will, their own paskening, taking the law, Hashem's law, into their own hands and being so confident that they're right, even though they've got Moshe there to ask, that is a reenactment of their behavior on Har Sinai. When they sat in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam with a subtle degree of casualness to which the Ribbono Shel Olam objected. What about the Zakenim? The Zakenim says they sat there with the Ribbono Shel Olam as if they were eating. That could be shvach, it could be praise. And it might not be. What's the praise? The praise is if they were eating. Whenever they ate, they considered themselves in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Whenever they ate, they were in a state of absolute kedusha. They considered their table like a mizbeach and their food like a korban, like a sacrifice. And they sat b'kedusha over Tyro and they ate their food. So when they sat before the Ribbono Shel Olam, there was no difference. They sat before him on Har Sinai and, so to say, saw the Shechina itself. And it was nothing special for them, because that's the way they behaved always. They saw no need to improve their behavior. It was so outstanding at all times. There was such kedusha, there was such sanctity to their conduct at all times, that the fact that they were in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam required no extra effort. They continued exactly the way they did at breakfast the previous morning or whenever they last ate. And then they leave Har Sinai and they want meat. What does it mean they want meat? These great people, they need meat. We've referred several times over the past few weeks to the role of the human being in the world around him as the role of the subject to the object. The Ribbono Shel Olam gives us ordinary things around us and wants us to elevate those things. Our function and our purpose is to infuse into the world around us meaning, spirituality, and elevation. And by the way we handle the things around us, that determines the extent to which they're elevated. That's why when a tzaddik eats, it's an elevation for the food. When a person uses the world for the correct reasons, uses a chair, uses a table, uses a motor car, uses his home, uses food, whatever he uses, if he uses it l'shem shemayim, if he's using it for the Ribbono Shel Olam, then he's taking an ordinary object and he's fitting it in to a scheme, to a spiritual scheme, where that object starts playing a spiritual role. It's no longer just an ordinary object. And that's our concept of Kedusha. We've discussed over and over again, we don't abstain from wine. We make Kiddush on wine. We take wine, the cause of so much human misery, the cause of so much profanity, the cause of so much degeneracy. We don't say, oh, wine is evil. We say, people treat wine evilly. And we take that same wine and we make Kiddush, we elevate the wine. That's what Kedusha means. We've got to take the world around us, every part of the world around us, and through our relationship to it, through the way we handle it, we have to elevate it into levels of higher spirituality. The Zakenim, when they came down from Har Sinai and were eating the mon, felt that they couldn't give expression to most of what the Torah required from them. They weren't living in a real world. The Torah wanted them to handle food, to shecht an animal properly with all the halachas of shechita, and to say the bracha when they shecht, and to kasher the animal properly, and to prepare it properly, and to say a bracha on the animal, and to eat the animal, be kedusha of a taro, and so elevate the animal. That's the way that they were able to introduce kedusha into the world. They didn't have the opportunity. There was mon. There was nothing to do. There was no possibility. Mon had Kedusha. It came to them. All of a sudden they were confronted and surrounded by a world that already had Kedusha. It didn't need them to add any sanctity to it. The mon they ate was holy. The water they drank was holy. They were surrounded by the Anone Kovet. The clothes they wore had Kedusha. Everything, they were surrounded by Kedusha. This little insulated world in which they moved was a world of Kedusha. There were no profane and secular objects to handle. Everything was Kodesh. And they craved the opportunity to have an ordinary piece of meat, an ordinary animal, to shecht, and to eat like an ordinary person, so that they could elevate it the way the Torah wanted them to do it. They felt the whole area of Avodas Hashem was being excluded from them in the way they were operating in the desert environment, in the midbar environment. That's the craving they had. So what was wrong with it? What's so terrible? So now we get a different picture of these people. Whenever they ate, they were on a level of Kedusha. When the Torah tells us they saw Hashem as if they were eating and drinking, that means that whenever they ate and drank, it was as if they were seeing Hashem. There was no difference. After Har Sinai, they wanted meat. For what reason? Not because they were hungry for meat. These are great people. They wanted meat to be able to express their Kedusha better. And the Rebbe Shem says, his avu taivo, they craved the craving, and he wipes them out, this anger. And now I see that even on Har Sinai, we see that that the intention wasn't correct. What is it? We're dealing in the Mesillas Yeshurim on Sunday mornings with people who try to do a little bit more than the minimum and often cause a lot of trouble by doing that. The minimum we have to do no matter what. What the halacha lays down is the minimum that every Jew has to keep. We can't manipulate that. We don't have any ownership over those halachas. But when it comes to the finesse, to the extra things, to the midas chasidus, to the chumras, to the minhagim, extra things which a person likes to be able to keep if he's on the level, there says the Mesillas Yeshurim, you have to be very careful. Because not everything you think is more frum, really is more frum. And the Mesillas Yeshurim tells us a yesoid, it tells us a very important principle. That it's necessary, he says, when you're moving beyond the realms of minimal level halacha, you've got to examine the ultimate consequence of your action. An action might look very frum, but if the ultimate consequence is going to be one of destruction and of negativity, then you mustn't do it, then it isn't more frum, then the appearance is misleading. And he goes through many examples of how people sometimes think they're doing the right thing, and as a result of a terrible destruction occurs That's the consequence of an action which was done for good reason and for good intent, but the action was not good. It just looked good. And it's a very frightening area in the Mesillas Yeshurim. Very frightening area. And we discussed how therefore it's so important for people to be Talmidei Chachomim. Some people think that to be a Talmid Chachom is a luxury. If you can manage it, you've got to become a Talmid Chochem. It's a very nice thing if you can manage. But we're just ordinary Balabatim. We can't manage it. You can't survive if you're an ordinary Balabos. Because one of the things you need to know is what is minimum halacha and what isn't. Where have I got manipulation? Where have I got a bit of freedom to decide, should I, shouldn't I? Where do I not have that freedom? So first of all, one needs to know the whole Shulchan Aruch. Otherwise one can't start. And then to understand what is halacha and what isn't, and what kind of latitude do I have, that we find in the Gemara. So one needs to know the whole Gemara. So we at least, if we want to remain Balabatim, that's fine, but we need to at least be that kind of Balabos that knows all four parts of Shulchan Aruch and all six Dorim of Shas. Then one can remain a Balabos if one chooses. But to think that one can be a Balabos, we can't. It means we're operating in a world without knowing what we need to know. So you might ask, so what hope is there for us? That's why I always stress that the style of our learning has to be the style of Talmidei Chachamim. Can't learn Balabatish. Even more so because we don't know everything. So that we get an approach at least. That we begin to feel. That we get at least an instinctive understanding of how to function. How to operate and how to analyze. It's all the more reason that our learning has to be deep and sensitive. And with intellectual depth. So very often people do things without really understanding whether it's a halacha or it's a chumra. And chumras are very important too. Person wants to be noyed by chumra. He wants to be a little bit more severe on himself because that's where he feels he's holding. The halacha is easy for him already. Now he wants to go a little bit further. There is such a thing, and it's a wonderful thing, certainly. And he wants to raise his standards a little bit higher. And ordinary kashrus is not sufficient for him. He wants to go mahadrin. It's a wonderful thing. And his ordinary shabbos is not enough for him. He wants to be even more makpid. He wants to be machmir, to be yetzer all the days on shabbos. Wonderful. But he needs to know what's minimum halacha and what's chumra. Because he will inevitably find himself in situations where the performance of a particular action might have negative consequences. And he's then got to start deciding, do I do it or don't I do it? Is this minimal halacha which has to be done no matter what? Or is this that area where I'm not only free to choose, but I'm obligated to choose whether to go ahead with it or not? And I spoke to you about how people do things without that understanding, and how that leads to incongruities, and it leads to misunderstandings, and it becomes quite a serious thing. A non-Jew said to me recently that he saw a frum Jew being dishonest. So he said, you know, I know that the people are people, and it can happen. It doesn't bother me so much that he's a frum Jew. He said that he wears his tzitzis out. That I don't understand. Is it a law that you must wear your tzitzis out? He said to me, you don't wear your tzitzis out. I said, yes, I do. And I showed him under my... Oh, he said, I didn't see. He says, but his I did see. I didn't know that you did. Does everybody wear the tzitzis out? I said, no, not everybody. He says, so it isn't a law. You don't have to. It's not like Shabbos. No, it's not like that. So he says, that means this is a goy. That this particular Jew regards himself already on a level where he's more than the ordinary Jew. What Jewish law requires, he's already keeping. And now he's going further. And not like you, he says to me. You wear your tzitzis out, but I can't see it. So good. So you might be saying, I don't know what you're saying, he says, but at least you're not publicizing that you're happy with the minimum laws. But he is. How can he be dishonest? How does it fit together? That was his kasha. A wonderful question, a very difficult one to answer. Once one moves beyond the basic requirements of the Shulchan Aruch, one is taking into one's hands an enormous responsibility. Because one has chosen to do something that one is not obligated to do. If you're obligated to do something, then the consequences are God's problems. Ribbono Shel Olam, you told me to keep Shabbos. If there's a goy who laughs at me because I keep Shabbos, that's your problem. I'm just doing what you told me. But if I'm doing more than you told me, then it becomes your problem if the goy laughs at you. Then it's Chilul Hashem already. Everyone has to be very careful. Or sometimes it causes machlikis. Person wants to keep Mahadrin levels of kashrut. It's wonderful. Wonderful thing. He's invited out to wonderful people, careful with everything. Their whole house they've made kosher. And they didn't want to rely, even when they made their whole house kosher, although they were Hetayim, they could have kashered certain things. No. They went and threw everything out and they bought from scratch. And they're careful, they don't use a single thing which isn't on the list of the Beis Din. And their milk and their meat never gets mixed up. And they ask a shayla the moment there's a suffix that something might have been mixed up, they ask a shayla. That's where they're holding. They're keeping the minimum requirements of the laws of kashrus to the absolute maximum of their ability. And this fellow is already holding by Mahadrin, gets invited out, and he says, excuse me, where do you buy your meat? Oh, you buy your meat there, do you mind if I just have part of it? And there's bitterness, there's sadness, there's rejection, there's machlokes. What's happened? A stupid fool. He's holding on the Hadrin, that's very nice. But he's allowing that to cause machlokes. He can't blame that machlokes on the Ribbono Shel Olam. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, I didn't tell you to keep Mahadrin. I gave you the principles, it's up to you. But once you take those principles into your own hands, you become responsible for the consequences. And if you can't handle it properly, you shouldn't be doing it. Or you should be doing it only for yourself. But to allow a hidur to become, to allow a hidur, which is a superiority in the mitzvah, a perfection in the mitzvah, to allow that to be the cause of human unhappiness, how can we do that? That, says the Mrs. Ashurim, is what one has to watch out for. False chassidus. People who practice chassidus before they're ready for it. And the result is destruction and destruction and destruction. Chilul Hashem, machlokes, unhappiness, all in the name of the Torah. This wonderful Torah, which causes so often such unnecessary hardship. These people, these Akanim, came away from Har Sinai feeling that they could be doing more than they're doing at the moment. The moment they're receiving Mon, it's wonderful. They're eating water from the Be'er Miriam, it's wonderful. They're surrounded by the Anone Kovud, it's wonderful. But they could be doing a greater service of Hashem if they could be Mekadesh, if they could sanctify their environment. If they could take meat, ordinary meat, and eat it with Kedusha, and turn an ordinary action into a sanctified action, how much more Kiddush Hashem would there be? So they're coming on to Chassidus. Their Shulchan Aruch says that it's sufficient for them to eat mon. That's sufficient. The Shulchan Aruch which they're operating with, the laws of their environment require that they eat mon, that they eat from the Be'er Miriam. That's what is required. That's how the Ribbono Shel Olam set them up at that time. You'll come to Eretz Yisrael, you'll have to plow the land, you'll have to shech the meat, you'll have to live an ordinary life. But right now, this is how I want you to live. They work out. Good. That's fine for everybody else. But we could do even better. Fine. What's the result of that thought? The next result is that the people start complaining. And here we see that the complaint, as we saw in the Rashi in Baal Yischo, as we saw in the Rashi in Gemara Shabbos, and as we saw in our Medrash, the misoinanim, the complaining about the, nothing to do with meat, the complaining about the walking, had its origins in that chassidus, in that desire to do a little bit more. And finally, in the asafsuf, in the people wanting the meat and expressing that and calling on Moshe to do something about it. And so we find, before we even try and understand it, let's just look at the facts, that what started out as being apparently a desire for more Kedusha had as its consequence complaining, unhappiness, misery. That happens very often. It happens in all sorts of environments. It happens even, it can happen in a yeshiva, it can happen in a beis hamedrash such as this, where you can have an individual or a group of individuals who start feeling unhappy. What are they unhappy about? They could be doing more. That's all. On the surface, that seems a wonderful thing to be unhappy about. Could be learning faster. Could be covering more ground. Could be learning deeper. Could be learning more often. Whatever it is, wonderful. There's no way one can really know the true deep motivation of that unhappiness until later on. Because then one of two things happen. Sometimes what happens is that that unhappiness leads to an improvement of standards. The person says, I could be learning more, could be learning better. So he starts organizing a little bit. He gets a chavrusa. He says, you know, I feel I could be learning more. Don't you think the same? The person says, yes, I just don't have time. He says, no, I also don't have time, but let's make time. How about we learn once a week, evenings? Are you learning evenings at the moment? Come, 8 o'clock we'll go back to the base of Medish, we'll learn for another 2 hours. Good, this is fine. And the complaint, the unhappiness, leads to higher standards. Somebody else sees them there, 8 o'clock at night, what are you doing? Well, we felt we could learn a little bit more, so we've made the time. No, I suppose if you can, I can too. And all of a sudden there's another chavrusa learning there. And another chavrusa learning there. And a feeling of unhappiness has caused a revolution. All of a sudden there's a new kvius, there's more learning. Then one knows that the original unhappiness was born out of kedusha and taharah, out of absolute sanctity. But sometimes the opposite happens. Could be learning a little bit more. Don't you think you could also be learning a little bit more? So maybe we're in the wrong place. Maybe we should look around. Maybe there's somewhere else where people do learn a little bit more. And then let's see, maybe we're the only ones who feel, you call us up, do you feel satisfied with the learning? Do you feel that you could be learning a little bit more? Don't you also feel we're not learning enough? And all of a sudden, there's a revolution. Everybody's unhappy. And learning less, and less, and less. Talking more, and complaining more, and feeling more unhappy. And less is being achieved. The same complaint. Both result in revolution. The consequence of the one revolution is more learning, more Torah, more depth. And the consequence of the other revolution is more long faces, more bitterness, more uneasiness. That's the difference. It's not just in a base major situation. It applies everywhere. You can have it in a business. You can have it among shareholders. You can have it among employees. Two ways to give expression to a feeling of dissatisfaction. Because dissatisfaction is the most important driving force in humanity. If we were always satisfied, we would never progress. So we're born with dissatisfaction. We need dissatisfaction. The question is, how is it channeled? How is it used? You'll get employees sometimes who'll start talking, do you think we're being treated well? Do you think we're doing? Do you think we're getting paid sufficiently? Should we look around for another job? Should we this? And all of a sudden there's a revolution. Another one, do you think we're doing our job right? Do you think we are? Let's get together, let's talk to management, maybe we can improve, maybe they're not happy with us. Maybe we should do a little bit of extra work and then demand higher wages. And all of a sudden you find more productivity and everybody's earning more. Two revolutions, both caused from the same dissatisfaction, a feeling of not earning enough money. The one results in increased productivity and the other results in decreased productivity. One is sincere and one is destructive. One can have it in a marriage. A couple are unhappy. Two things can happen. They start examining themselves. How can we solve the unhappiness? How can we get on top of it? Another couple, chas v'sholem, start looking at ways out. Is divorce an option? Isn't divorce an option? How do other people compare with you and look how happy they are? And look what a nice girl she is, and look what a nice person he is, and if I'd married him, maybe I wouldn't have been so unhappy. And all of a sudden there's distraction. Revolution. From the same feeling of unhappiness. There's nothing wrong with feeling dissatisfied. There's nothing wrong with feeling uncomfortable. There's nothing wrong with feeling a desire and a craving for more. But now we're moving on to Chassidus. We're moving on a desire for more than a minimum. Wonderful. What's the consequence? Is the consequence taka more? Or is the consequence less? And here we see that the consequence of that unhappiness was less. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, 1 minute. If the consequence was negative, then the complaint was negative. What did you want? You wanted meat. And you thought what you wanted was more kedusha. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, he's avu taivo. The Ribbono Shel Olam, cheke levov, is he who is able to see right into the hearts, to the depths. Nobody else would have been able to perceive it, not even the Shirim Zakenim themselves. But the Ribbono Shel Olam perceives right into the depths. What you thought was a desire for more kedusha was a desire for meat. That's what it was. That's all you wanted. And you dressed it up to the point where you fooled even yourselves into believing that it was a desire for more kedusha. If it was really a desire for more kedusha, the whole nation wouldn't have been incited to this level. It wouldn't have been so infectious and so negative and so divisive. On the contrary, if you really wanted more kedusha, there would have been more kedusha. You could have done it. Now, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, let's look back at Har Sinai. You sat there as if you were eating and drinking. And I thought, Kibyochel, as if to say, the Rosh Hashanah knew, of course, he was Chokel Lebovitz, but it had to come to expression before he could punish it. You gave the impression that you were casual on Har Sinai because it was nothing special. Whenever you eat and drink, you sit there as if you're in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now you've shown that not to be the case. Now you've shown that when you eat and drink, you're enjoying the meat. That's what you're doing. And therefore, when you sat casually on Har Sinai, as if you were eating and drinking, that doesn't mean it's because when you're eating and drinking, it's as if you're in the presence of God. What it means is that even when you're in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, you're acting as if you're merely eating and drinking. Now you have to be punished, not only for your desire for meat now, which appeared to be more kedusha, but now you have to be punished also for the casualness of your attitude on Har Sinai. Just as Nodav V'Aviyu had to be punished retrospectively once they paskened halacha b'fnei Rabbon, they had to be punished retrospectively also for the way they behaved on Har Sinai, because it showed, it reflected and expressed a casualness which was unacceptable. Again, on their level, we're speaking about people which are great beyond, who are great beyond our conception. Nodav, Aviyu, sons of Aaron, Shivim Zakenim, the 70 choicest of people of Klal Yisrael, and of which generation of Klal Yisrael, of the Mekablei HaTorah, the people who stood at the foot of Har Sinai. That's the generation we're talking about, no ordinary people. We're talking on their level, and there's a principle here. We would never have noticed it. We would never have noticed the slightest hint of impropriety. We would never have noticed the slightest hint of taiva. Nothing. We would only have seen kedusha v'taira, sanctity and purity. But the Torah finds it necessary to reveal to us that on their level, it wasn't 100% pure. Because there's a principle. And the principle is that if a dissatisfaction starts off impure, even slightly impure, it will destroy, and it will divide, and it will breed more dissatisfaction, and it will cause a revolution of a negative nature. But if the dissatisfaction is really pure and is really positive, it will bring with it a tremendous revolution in the direction of improvement and of betterment and of greater kedusha and tahara. We had three difficulties on the Medrash. First was the second is how such great people could have desired and craved meat. We've dealt with that. They didn't see it as craving meat. They craved the opportunity for greater kedusha. The Ribbono Shel Olam revealed, as a result of the consequence of that dissatisfaction, that there was a small minute particle of insincerity, a small minute particle of a desire for meat. But that was enough on their level to call them misavim taiva. We asked what was the link between that and their casual behavior on Har Sinai. We've now explained that too. That once the Ribbono Shel Olam revealed that there was that they were people who enjoyed a piece of meat as well, and that's what they wanted. In the deep underlying levels of their subconscious. Then that retrospectively revealed that the casualness of their conduct on Har Sinai was not all Kedusha v'Tahara, that there was a little bit of secularity in that as well, which the Ribbono Shel Olam couldn't accept. The first question that we asked was the sequence of events here. The first thing you'll remember was they traveled away from the mountain. The second one was they were misoinonim. They complained about the road, about the traveling. Then there was the fire that destroyed them, and then they complained about the meat. And we said the Medrash seems to mix it all up. It says that who complained about the meat? The Zakenim. And the Zakenim got killed by the fire. But we asked that the fire was before they complained about the meat. The fire was when they were complaining about the road. But it seems as if on this understanding we can put the sequence together. We trace the origin of it all to Vayisu Mehar Hashem. When they left Har Sinai, that's the time at which it all started, where they felt for the first time that they could be operating on a higher level if they had ordinary things. If they had meat and they had an ordinary life around them, they didn't want such miracles, to live on this level of Nisim, that's for Malachim, that's for angels. They wanted to put the Torah into practice. They'd just been given the Torah with all the halachas. They wanted to put as much of it into practice as possible. But deep under there, you'll remember, we decided there was a touch of insincerity, a touch of a desire to turn away from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And Rashi says in Gemara Shabbos, that's when they first craved meat. They didn't say anything, they didn't complain, they might not even have noticed the craving themselves. But the Torah gives evidence that at that point already, they started craving meat within those 3 days. Then comes the misoinonim, for which there was the fire. They complain, they're burnt by fire. Who's burnt by fire? Among the people that are burnt are the Shivim Zakenim. What are they being burnt for? Not for complaining about the road. Why are they being burnt? They are being burnt because others are complaining about the road. Others complaining about the road means, why is everybody complaining? Why is everybody unhappy? Chazal traced the unhappiness back to the fact that there was already some unhappiness at Har Sinai on a different subject. But infections are funny. Sometimes one can infect a person with a disease different to the disease one has oneself. A slightly different strain. Not every time you make somebody else ill does the person have the illness in the same way as one has oneself. And so the infectiousness here resulted in a different kind of complaining. They were looking for reasons already. But that was enough to show that the consequences of the Sanhedrin's original desire were negative. And if the consequences were negative, the desire was impure. And therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam punishes them at the time of the Misoinonim for their unexpressed craving for meat, which took place earlier. And then it spreads to the other people, the Asafsuf, and even the Erev Rav also start complaining and wanting meat. That means that we've been given a very powerful tool. A tool which is meant to be used to spur us on to progress. But it's fire. And that's why they're punished with fire. Fire is positive. Fire is energy. Fire is warmth. Fire is power. And fire is destruction. And one can start a fire for the best of reasons. One can start the fire to warm people up. But a spark can jump out of that fire and burn the house down. That's the nature of fire. The fire that the Ribbono Shel Olam has put into our hearts is the fire of unhappiness. He's made us capable of being unhappy. One should ask oneself ordinarily, why did he give us that ability? Imagine how much more effective we could be if we were not capable of being unhappy. Just imagine what a world this would be. What lives we could lead. The depression is being recognized as a disease, as a serious disease, as a disease which is causing an enormous loss of productivity among Western nations. Imagine if we couldn't get depressed. The Ribbono Shel Olam created within us the ability to be unhappy. Because unhappiness spurs us on. animals don't get depressed. They don't suffer from depression. They don't need psychiatrists. Because they've got nothing to do. They don't need unhappiness. Unhappiness, the ability to be unhappy, is one of the most precious gifts that the Ribbono Shel Olam has given us. Because from that unhappiness comes better tefillah, better prayer, more effort. We rethink, we replan, we reorganize. Unhappiness often brings the very best out of us. And we have to treasure that gift of unhappiness. But it's a fire. It can warm us up. It can give us energy. It can motivate us and infuse us. But it can destroy us too. And if it could only destroy us, it would be a howitzer. But sparks can fly. It's terribly infectious. Unhappiness makes other people unhappy. And there's where one has to be careful. If I'm going to make somebody else unhappy, that's an enormous responsibility. If I'm going to make him unhappy, and as a result of that he will be spurred to greater energies and to greater heights, then I get a bit of a share of that. So if somebody comes into my shiur and is unprepared, and I decide to make him unhappy, and as a result of that he learns through the night when he gets home, and gets on the top of the Gemara, and he's really mastered it, and is wonderful, I feel I've used unhappiness well, Baruch Hashem. I've lit his fire, and he has taken the fire, and he's used it to warm himself up and to energize himself, and fire is being used properly. But if we use unhappiness to make other people unhappy for the sake of unhappiness, then we're destroying. And it's all very well to go up to somebody and say, are you happy with your learning? But then one has to watch the result. If the result is, I think I could be doing better. Come, will you sit down with me and help me? Then fire is being used well. Then energy results and progress results. And that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam made that unhappiness for. And then there's no depression. Depression occurs only. I suppose there is such a thing as a disease called depression. I don't know. I suppose there is. I suppose there is something clinical. I suppose there are all sorts of chemicals and things inside the human being, the imbalances of which cause depression. But I don't know if they've ever really sought what causes the original imbalance. I suppose there is a degree of hereditary, but a lot of it is being passed off as clinical when it's really behavioral. And there's so much depression which is not clinical. There's so much depression which simply occurs when a person is unhappy and unable or unwilling to do anything about it. That's depression. When a person is dissatisfied and is unable or unwilling to do anything about it. A person feels himself in a rut. Somebody has been promoted over his head. He realizes he has no future where he's working. So you say, leave. He says, I can't, I'm in my 50s already. I can't leave. What can I do? Can't start again at this stage. Unable to do anything about it. And somebody else is promoted over his head. Then everybody gets a rise except him. Can't do anything about it. Causes depression. Good. One has to work out how to handle that depression. But there are many other depressions where one could do something about it. One just doesn't want to. One thrives on the depression. One thrives sometimes on a faribu. One thrives sometimes on feeling unhappy and dissatisfied. One feels unique. One feels one has a reason in this world. Who else could be as unhappy as me? And one actually creates a mission out of it. Once I called in somebody who was depressed. And he says, no, please don't worry about me. I've accepted that my lot is like Job. My role is to be miserable. Can you believe it? Intelligent human being. My role is to be miserable. Well, surely his role is to be miserable. There's, once one adopts that attitude, there's nothing anybody can do. Nothing anybody can do. And that causes depression. And the depression feeds on itself and gets worse and worse within oneself and becomes infectious. Other people get it too. But if one's able to take that unhappiness and say, Ribbono Shel Olam, you're obviously making me unhappy for a reason. That means you're not satisfied with me. That's why I'm unhappy. You want me to realize that what I'm doing is not enough. What a privilege. That means that you want more from me than I'm doing. That means you consider me capable of more than I'm doing. 1 minute, let me sit down, take out a pencil and paper, let me figure out what can I do more, how can I improve myself, how can I pull myself out of the rut, How can I get myself going? And the depression's over. 1, 2, 3, no depression. And the result of that is more kedusha and more tahara. We have to be careful not to look at the depression and the complaints and the aggravation and analyze them on their own. One can only analyze a depression or a complaint or a faribu in terms of its consequence. When one's able to show that one's unhappiness and dissatisfaction resulted in an improved state, one knows that it was Lashem Shemayim and that one has overcome it. If one's unhappiness and misery has resulted in an impaired state, one knows it was self-centeredness, destructiveness, and not Lashem Shemayim at all. That's the principle that the Torah wants to teach us from this fascinating parasha of the Misoinonim. That even the most holy of motives, of desires and of cravings, are sometimes not quite as holy as we think they are. And we can analyze them only in their consequences. Once we get into the privileged area of unhappiness, that's like a chassidus, a midas chassidus already. There's no halacha that one must be unhappy. That's really midas chassidus. If one's going into unhappiness, one's going beyond the requirements of halacha. Then one has to adopt the responsibilities which the Mesilas Yesharim lays down. Fine, you want to be unhappy? But see that you do something with that unhappiness. Use that energy. Motivate yourself and ensure that the dissatisfaction which you're feeling within yourself or about yourself or about others is used to improve the state of Kedusha in yourself and in those around you.